Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Jeremiah chapter 40, which I will call Jeremiah Remains in Judah. Now, the city of Jerusalem has been burnt down in 586 BC in the previous chapter, and so from here on out, we're going to be talking about the life of Jeremiah post-exile, post-586 BC. We start now in Jeremiah 40, verses 1 through 4. The word came to Jeremiah from the Lord after Nebuzaradan, commander of the imperial guard, had released him at Ramah. He had found Jeremiah bound in chains among all the captives from Jerusalem and Judah who were being carried into exile to Babylon. When the commander of the guard found Jeremiah, he said to him, "The Lord your God decreed this disaster for this place, and now the Lord has brought it about. He has done just as he said he would. All this happened because you people sinned against the Lord and did not obey him. But today I am freeing you from the chains on your wrist. Come with me to Babylon if you like, and I will look after you. But if you do not want to, then don't come. Look, the whole country lies before you. Go wherever you please." Now in verse 1, we see that the word came to Jeremiah. Well, this word refers to a prophecy which came 10 days later, which we will not get to for two chapters. In Jeremiah 42:7, we read, "Now at the end of 10 days, the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah." But before we get to that point, there's a lot of history to go through, which we will go through in this audio and the next one. Well, what was the word? Just to give us a sneak preview, Jeremiah 42:10. Jeremiah prophesies to the remnant of the Jews. "If you will indeed stay in this land, then I will rebuild and not demolish you, and I will plant and not uproot you, because I relent concerning the disaster that I have brought on you." Once again, Jeremiah is not listened to because they didn't stay in the land, as we'll see. But at any rate, between verse 1 here, the word came to Jeremiah, and when the word actually came in chapter 42, verse 7, we have a lot of intervening material, all of which is history. Now in verse 1, we see that Nebuzaradan, who was the commander of the imperial guard, some kind of military official for King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, he had turned Jeremiah loose after having found him bound in chains at Ramah. Now, Ramah was a city in the land of Benjamin near Gibeon. The city was about 6 miles, Ramah was, about 6 miles due north of Jerusalem, according to BibleAtlas.org. Jeremiah had been carried in chains there. Now, we have a harmonization problem, which I mentioned in the last audio. In Jeremiah 39:13-14, we read this, "Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, Nebushazban, the Rabsaris, Nergal-Sharezer, the Rabmag, and all the captains of the king of Babylon had Jeremiah brought from the guard's courtyard." Courtyard of the guard, that was in the king's palace, King Zedekiah's palace, right near the temple, probably south and down a little bit from the temple. And there was a prison there, and that's where Jeremiah had been left, right here. Well, actually, at the end of chapter 39, it says Jeremiah was in the guard's courtyard. But verse 14 says that Nebuzaradan and his other Babylonian officials had Jeremiah brought from the guard's courtyard and turned him over to Gedaliah from the guard's courtyard. But here in Jeremiah 40, verse 1, we have Nebuzaradan turning Jeremiah loose at Ramah, not in the guard's courtyard back in Jerusalem. Well, the simplest way to harmonize that was done by the pulpit commentary back in chapter 39. Here's what happened according to that commentary, and I think it's perfectly reasonable. Jeremiah is in the courtyard of the guard in Jerusalem. Jerusalem is taken. So then the Babylonians took those that they were going to take in exile to Babylon. They took them first to Ramah, right north of Jerusalem. Jeremiah was taken from the courtyard of the guard, just like Jeremiah 39:14 says. He was taken out of the courtyard of the guard. But he wasn't delivered directly to Gedaliah. He goes to Ramah first. Nebuzaradan had come to Jerusalem to deal with the city's fate. When he gets there, he sends for Jeremiah, who is at Ramah now, not in the courtyard of the guard, and Nebuzaradan releases him. So basically, Jeremiah 39:14 is a summary account. Jeremiah 39:14 says Jeremiah brought from the guard's courtyard. Yes, he was, but he was sent to Ramah first, and then he was turned over to Gedaliah, son of Ahikam. The part about him being sent to Ramah was just not mentioned in Jeremiah 39 because it was a summary account. Now, in verse 2, Nebuzaradan says to Jeremiah, "God decreed this disaster." I just love to hear pagan idolaters preaching sermons to a prophet of God, a prophet of Yahweh. Yahweh, your God, says Nebuzaradan decreed this disaster. Well, that's actually true, because Jeremiah's prophecies had gotten to be very famous, and Nebuzaradan had heard about it. And then Nebuzaradan continues in verse 3, and now the Lord has brought it about. Absolutely true. He has done just as he said he would. Absolutely true. All this happened because you people sinned against the Lord and did not obey him. Absolutely true. Well, before we start thinking that Nebuzaradan is a pious believer in God, we need to remember, of course, that he is still a pagan. And I bet that if Babylon had gotten beaten, he wouldn't be going around saying, well, Babylon was beaten because God decreed this disaster for this place, and God brought it about, and he did just as he said he would, and it all happened because we Babylonians sinned against the Lord. Oh, no, I don't think Nebuzaradan would have said that. So he's basically repeating to Jeremiah what Jeremiah had said, and of course that was to buck Jeremiah up. He liked what Jeremiah had said because it favored Babylon. And so in verse 4, Nebuzaradan frees Jeremiah from the chains on your wrist. It's very interesting in verse 3, Nebuzaradan says, you people sinned. It's interesting that a Babylonian would ascribe moral causes to the disaster and not Babylonian valor. The reason you guys beat is because we are invincible. We are the great Babylonian army. He didn't do that. So out of the mouth of pagans comes the truth. Now in verse 4, when Nebuzaradan freed Jeremiah, this was in response to a command earlier given by Nebuchadnezzar. We read in the last chapter, chapter 39, verses 11 through 12, speaking through Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon gave orders concerning Jeremiah, saying, take him, look after him, and don't let any harm come to him. Do for him whatever he says. And that's why Nebuzaradan was so friendly towards Jeremiah. The reason Nebuchadnezzar liked Jeremiah so much was because Jeremiah had been prophesying many, many things for many years, favoring the Babylonians. So Nebuzaradan gives Jeremiah the choice. Come to Babylon if you want, otherwise hang around here, go wherever you please. Now, actually, Jeremiah might have been better off to go to Babylon when we read the subsequent history here. He's got some bad things happening back in Jerusalem after the destruction in 586. And even if those bad things hadn't have happened, just living in a burnout land of Judah would be sort of depressing. But of course, being in exile would be depressing too. But in other words, Jeremiah's choices weren't all that great. We go now to Jeremiah 40, verses 5 through 6. However, before Jeremiah turned to go, Nebuzaradan added, go back to Gedaliah, son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, whom the king of Babylon has appointed over the towns of Judah, and live with him among the people, or go anywhere else you please. So Nebuzaradan gives a little hint where he thinks he ought to go, and it makes sense because Gedaliah, son of Ahikam, was appointed by Nebuchadnezzar as the governor of Judah. Jeremiah is a prophet. Prophets often hung around kings. It would make sense for Jeremiah to go there. Then the commander, that's Nebuzaradan, gave Jeremiah provisions and a present and let him go. The provisions is probably food. Remember, this is a time of famine and disaster. So Jeremiah went to Gedaliah, son of Ahikam, that's the governor, the Jewish guy who was appointed governor, probably because he had gone over to the Babylonians earlier, probably listened to Jeremiah's prophecies and said, the future is not with Zedekiah, the future is with Nebuchadnezzar. And so he went over to Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar rewarded him by making him governor. And Gedaliah set up his government at Mizpah. Now, if you look at the map, Mizpah is about 10 miles due north on the road from Jerusalem. Ramah is about 2 miles slightly southeast, south-southeast of Mizpah, where Jeremiah had been released from. So Jeremiah just had to go just a couple of miles, and he's at Mizpah where Gedaliah was, and that's what he did. Verse 6, Jeremiah went to Gedaliah at Mizpah, and Jeremiah stayed with him among the people who were left behind in the land. So Jeremiah is right in the middle of activities, and of course I'm sure that's where he got his information about the history here, which was recorded in his book for our benefit. We go now to Jeremiah 40, verses 7 through 8. When all the army officers and their men who were still in the open country heard that the king of Babylon had appointed Gedaliah, son of Ahikam, as governor over the land, and had put him in charge of the men, women, and children who were the poorest in the land and who had not been carried into exile to Babylon, they came to Gedaliah at Mizpah. Ishmael, son of Nethaniah, Johanan and Jonathan, the sons of Kareah, Sariah, son of Tanhumith, the sons of Ephai, the Netophathite, and Jazaniah, the son of the Makathite, and their men. Now all these army officers, which are spoken of in verse 7, are the remaining military officials of the Jerusalem army, which of course had been smashed. But they were still hanging around in the outskirts of Jerusalem, had not been captured. Their men were there in the open country, not in Jerusalem. If they had been in Jerusalem, they'd have been toast. They heard about Gedaliah being appointed governor. And Gedaliah had been appointed governor of all the poor people in the land. Remember, the Babylonians had taken all the artisans, the skilled laborers, the nobles. Everybody had already gone off to Babylon. And some of the nobles had gotten taken in 597. But in 586, I guess you could put it this way, the upper class and the middle class had already gone. The lower class was left behind in Babylon. And as I said in the last audio, the reason for that is because they were trouble to carry to Babylon. They wouldn't do the Babylonians any good. They wouldn't help the economy. But if they stayed and farmed the land, they could grow some crops and perhaps produce some tax revenue for the king of Babylon. Now in verse 8, we see some of the new officials of the rump kingdom of Israel. It's not a kingdom, the rump province of Judah. Ishmael, son of Nethaniah, is mentioned first. He's going to be mentioned again later because he is the one who is eventually going to assassinate Gedaliah. The next guy that's mentioned, two guys, Johanan and Jonathan, the sons of Kareah. Jonathan, we don't know anything about, but Johanan was an army officer, we see later in verse 13, who had tried to warn Gedaliah that Ishmael, son of Nethaniah, is about to knock off Gedaliah, about to assassinate him. So he'll show up a little bit later, Johanan, son of Kareah. Sariah, son of Tanhumith, we don't know anything about. The sons of Ephai, the Netophathite, nothing is known of them either. However, the city is about 2 miles southeast of Bethlehem, right in the mountains that separate the Judean desert from the Dead Sea. They inhabited several villages around Netophah. And last of all, there is someone called Jazaniah, the son of Makathite. Don't know anything about him either. Maka was a concubine mentioned in the genealogy at the first of First Chronicles. Caleb's concubine, Maka. I'm not sure it's the same Caleb of Joshua and Caleb. John Gill says it's not. I don't really care. So we move now to Jeremiah 40, verses 9 through 10. Gedaliah, son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, took an oath. Now Gedaliah is the governor. He took an oath to reassure them, reassure all the remaining army officers and their men. Do not be afraid to serve the Babylonians, he said. Settle down in the land and serve the king of Babylon, and it will go well with you. I myself will stay at Mizpah to represent you before the Babylonians who come to us, but you are to harvest the wine, summer fruit, and oil, and put them in your storage jars, and live in the towns you have taken over. They had taken the towns over because the Babylonians had given them the lands of the deportees, the ones that they had carried off to Babylon. They said, we've got the owners of the land now, we'll give it to you poor people. Sounds like a good deal. I think I would have rather stayed in Jerusalem rather than go into Babylon. But things are not going to be so rosy as we see. So in verse 9, Gedaliah takes an oath to reassure the remaining army. What kind of oath did he take? Well, as Ellicott says, he swore to give full amnesty for those who had fought against the Babylonians. Remember now, Gedaliah is now an occupation governor. He's representing the nasty Babylonians, and you can imagine that if you were someone who fought against the Babylonians, you might feel a little insecure. And so Gedaliah says, don't worry, I'm not going to nail you. You just grow your crops. Gedaliah says, I'm going to stay here at Mizpah in verse 10. Why at Mizpah? That was on the way to Babylon. Babylon comes from the north, coming down from across the Euphrates River in Syria, coming down to the north, and so Mizpah was on the way. And of course, Gedaliah is at Mizpah because Jerusalem is burnt down. That's why he's not at Jerusalem. And so Gedaliah says, I'm going to represent you guys. Just be loyal. Everything will be copacetic. Meanwhile, while we wait to see what the Babylonians do with us as they come down to govern us, you are to harvest the wine. Now, Jerusalem was captured in August, July or August, so it was summertime. The grapes are typically harvested in the fall, and so there was a wine harvest. We're going to see it was an abundant harvest in just a minute. And of course, the wines, and of course, the vineyards were not in Jerusalem, which had been burnt down. They were in outlying areas. So the Babylonians didn't ravage everything. So Gedaliah says, look, you guys, harvest the wine, the summer fruit. If the city fell in July and August, there's still some summertime left to grow fruit. And plus, the fruit is grown outside of Jerusalem. And oil, that's the olives. Put them in your storage jars. Now, right here, this is a little off the subject. It's an excursus, if you will, but I finally got so tired of getting confused on the dates that I went and found five scriptures that give the dates concerning the siege of Jerusalem and its destruction. And I put it all on a table. So here we go. The siege began on Kislev 10. That's November and December. 588. The city wall of Jerusalem was breached on Tammuz 9. That's June, July, 586, 18 months later. Now, a month later, Nebuzaradan enters said breach, or he enters somewhere into the city. That's Av 7, 586. Av is July and August. And then the temple was burnt down on Av 10, 586, 3 days later. That little table is worth its weight in gold if you're trying to navigate your way through Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. And fortunately, there's not a lot of controversy on the dates. Now, notice that Nebuzaradan entered Jerusalem on Av 7 to burn it down. He didn't burn it down to Av 10. The Talmud, the Jewish Talmud, says the actual destruction of the temple began on Av 9, and it was finished on Av 10. That's not biblical. That's in the Talmud. And so the Jews have this very sad annual Jewish fast day of Tisha B'Av. Tisha is ninth of Av, where everything disastrous happened to Israel, including the burning of Jerusalem in AD 70. I don't know how close they are on that date either. It's kind of interesting. We go now to Jeremiah 40, verses 11 through 16, and we will finish this chapter. When all the Jews in Moab, Ammon, Edom, and all the other countries heard that the king of Babylon had left a remnant in Judah and had appointed Gedaliah, son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, as governor over them, they all came back to the land of Judah, to Gedaliah at Mizpah, from all the countries where they had been scattered, and they harvested an abundance of wine and summer fruit. Yohanan, son of Kareah, and all the army officers still in the open country came to Gedaliah at Mizpah and said to him, don't you know that Balas, king of the Ammonites, has sent Ishmael, son of Nethaniah, to take your life? But Gedaliah, son of Ahikam, did not believe them. Then Yohanan, son of Kareah, said privately to Gedaliah in Mizpah, let me go and kill Ishmael, son of Nethaniah, and no one will know it. Why should he take your life and cause all the Jews who are gathered around you to be scattered and the remnant of Judah to perish? But Gedaliah, son of Ahikam, said to Yohanan, son of Kareah, don't do such a thing. What you are saying about Ishmael is not true. All right, in verse 11, we see that the scattered Jews who had fled from the Babylonians, they had gone to neighboring countries. Moab is to the east of the southern end of the Dead Sea. Ammon is right north of Moab, to the east of the northern end of the Dead Sea, and on up into Gilead, east of the Jordan River for a little ways. Edom is to the south of the Dead Sea, both to the west and the east, straddling the Arab Valley. And then it says that Jews from those places and all the other countries, I don't know where that would be, Syria perhaps, heard that the king of Babylon, that's Nebuchadnezzar, had left a remnant in Judah, and that Gedaliah was there as appointed governor. They all came back, and they worked. They harvested an abundance of wine and summer fruit, and there was a lot of food available. So, the siege being over, they're in relatively good shape. And we'll see later, Jeremiah said, stay here. I think Jeremiah was right. Even in the natural, even without a prophecy from God, stay there and grow your stuff. Now, in verse 13, we hear about the conspiracy of Ishmael, son of Nethaniah. He, of course, was one of the officials that was ruling with Gedaliah. We know that Ishmael was of royal seed. We see in the next chapter, Jeremiah 41, verse 1, in the seventh month, Ishmael, son of Nethaniah, son of Elishama, of the royal family, and one of the king's chief officers. That was Zedekiah's chief officer. And so he was a big shot. Maybe that's why Gedaliah couldn't believe that he would try to assassinate him, that he would be suborned by the king of Ammon, a gentleman named Balas. Jonathan, son of Kareah, got wind of the assassination plot somehow. We are not told how. He goes to Gedaliah and says, hey, you better take this guy out. He doesn't actually say that. He says, this guy's trying to kill you. I assume that implies that you need to take him out. Gedaliah did not believe Yohanan, son of Kareah. Yohanan was probably the principal military official next to Ishmael. Maybe Gedaliah thought that Yohanan was jealous of Ishmael, son of Nethaniah, and wanted to take his place. John Gill says of Ishmael, son of Nethaniah, quote, "Very likely Ishmael had behaved in a very princely, complaisant manner, and had expressed a great affection for the governor, and had been very familiar with him. And being of the seed royal, it is highly probable Gedaliah had shown a distinguished regard to him." Well, perhaps Gedaliah was a good and kindly man, and found it hard to think evil of Ishmael. But he was not acting responsibly, because Yohanan was a credible informant, a man high up in the military of Israel, of Judah. Gedaliah could have at least investigated. Nah, I don't believe that. That's impossible. So Gedaliah was negligent in not checking out the story, not only for his own sake, but for the sake of the whole Jewish nation, especially since those who brought the charge against Ishmael of Nethaniah were very credible servants of Israel. Now, this first mention of the subject of the possible assassination plot came from Yohanan and all the army officers. They all came to Gedaliah together, but when Gedaliah didn't listen, Yohanan, son of Kareah, in verse 15, went back to Gedaliah privately and said, "Let me go kill Ishmael, son of Nethaniah. Nobody will know it. Nobody will know you'll have anything to do with it. I'll take it on my own hands." Yohanan says, "Look, he's going to kill you, and then we who are gathered around you are going to be scattered." Because when Gedaliah gets killed, Gedaliah's courtiers, associates, they're going to either get killed or run out of Mizpah by the assassin. And so Yohanan was not only afraid for Gedaliah's sake and for Judah's sake, but he had some personal skin in the game. He would likely be killed or exiled if this assassination plot came out. But unfortunately, in verse 16, Gedaliah says, "Nah, it's not true." So Gedaliah didn't really treat Yohanan very well here. Yohanan was legitimately scared that his life and his property and all of his associates' lives and their property would not be safe under a murderer such as he very well suspected Ishmael, son of Nethaniah, to be. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished Jeremiah chapter 40, and we are now prepared to go to our next chapter, chapter 41, which I will entitle Gedaliah is Murdered. I hope to see you for the next chapter, and I hope you enjoyed our discussion of this chapter.